All right, everybody, it's the Brain Trust Podcast live from Gen Con 2022, and I'm Adam Vass, a tabletop game designer in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
I'm Willie Ups, tabletop game designer in the Indianapolis Convention Center, Indiana, USA.
This year, we're starting the tailgate. We're roasting some weenies, we're chugging some fuel, and we are outside of that one building, the one where Gen Con is.
We are tailgating Gen Con. We're going to be here for the foreseeable future until they let us in those big pearly gates to buy a t-shirt that says something about my other car is board games. And we are inviting anyone that is going to a convention at the convention center to join us for the tailgate in the lead up. So we've got the Michigan Dentist Association is here with us tonight.
Yeah, they're rolling bones. They've got pockets full of kids' teeth.
It's their equivalent of having a little flag or whatever on your badge. What are those things? Like,
oh, the little it sticky says, like, banners that say,
yeah, they could have like pronouns and they say achievements and they say the piezo man sat on my head and stuff like that. For the dentist con, you try and build a full maw of teeth for that.
Yeah. And it, rather than being stickers, they're literal teeth that you plug in.
True Brain Trust fans will know that we've designed a game about teeth in on each other. But yeah, we are here. We are getting our tan on in the hot Indiana sun. We are going to the Aubon Pan, 8 blocks away from Gen Con, the only quiet place to get lunch. And it's going to be a wonderful con this year. What are you looking forward to?
Well, I got to admit, one of my top priorities is the Ennies ceremony because, no joke, I got nominated for one of them.
Yeah, congratulations.
Babes in the Wood is nominated for Best Family Game. And you should vote for it if voting is still open when you're listening. I would go bananas. I want to win. I like to pretend like, oh, it's an honor to be nominated. It's the first time I've been making games for years and I'm finally nominated, but I want it bad.
Yeah. Just like when we won the Indie Groundbreakers Most Innovative, we were like, oh, we're very humbly accepting this.
Right.
And then we showed up and did a video of both of us in Ghost CGI saying we're the best. But yeah, congratulations, that's huge. Seb also won a Judges Spotlight Award for Dwelling, so there is a lot of radical stuff going on this year at the NAs, a lot of cool Brain Trust folks, and go ahead and vote right now. We will be at the NAs. We will be operating the dunk tank. So it'll be the side of the stage, and whatever podcaster wins this year, we will be submerging in water.
Yeah, they will be live on mic.
Love underwater.
Passes by as dunk tanks do.
Yeah, we are doing Carney. We are kind of Carney patrol this year at Gen Con.
What's something you're looking forward to at the con this year? I like to, we in the industry, we like to call it the con.
The con. It's the only con. I'm really looking forward to seeing the cops at night, just walking in the middle of the street, commenting on nerds, which is something I observed several times at past Gen Cons. So I'm looking forward to that. I am thinking about hitting some of my favorite spots. Obviously, you got to go to Nemo's for a steak and potatoes. You've got to go to that place where the train tracks go over the road, so it's a quiet place to have a mental breakdown. That's really good. And obviously, I'm going to have to hit up True Dungeon, the place I love going the most at Gen Con.
That's my favorite restaurant at Gen Con.
It's True Dungeon?
Yeah. I like to eat the salamander tails from the potion cauldron. I love a little roasted goblin finger.
Chicken leg,
A full turkey leg.
I have been theory crafting my build for this year's True Dungeon.
I want to hear that, but before I forget, there is a restaurant that I always end up at that's like 2 blocks away from the convention center. It's like a beer garden kind of
yard
place,
house.
But I was like, oh, they have vegan options. That's exciting. And I did get orange chicken, and they asked if I wanted spicy rice. And when I said yes, it turned out to be Spanish rice. And I can't get that out of my brain. I almost every time I've gotten a vegan orange chicken since then, and it comes with, you know, white or brown rice,
yeah.
I'm left wanting.
A whole bit of fusion that this could have. Right, that's the Yard House, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Indianapolis is like basically one of the worst cities I've ever been to, I would say.
Yeah, it do
overall.
Suck. What's your True Dungeon build? Let's get back to that before.
Okay, I've got a couple of theory crafted idea builds. Number one is the Doxer build. So any opponent I find in True Dungeon, I'm going to be carrying my cell phone. I'm going to try and find them online and get them to break kayfabe. And I think that will kind of deprogram a lot of the harder situations in True Dungeon.
Yeah, that's an ultimate attack.
Yeah, I will have to charge it up. So like a wizard, I only have a few hit points. I got to stay in back. So I definitely need someone to tank while I kind of geolocate. You know, put up some feelers, get Reddit accounts, Discord handles, everything like that.
Yeah, credit card numbers, just anything that might help.
Yeah, I will do stuff like... I just watched The Town. You ever see The Town?
I've only seen the end where I... spoiler alert.
Wow.
I believe there might be a shootout outside of a Dunkies. Is that the right movie?
100%. Yeah. 100%. Spoilers for The Town. Ben Affleck's The Town. That makes sense that you would only see the end because you watch Jeremy Renner gets killed compilations a lot. Any movie where Jeremy Renner has been murdered, I just love those scenes. Anyway, they do a heist somewhere. First of all, The Town made me really nostalgic for Boston.
Yeah, it does.
It because they're all like, it's all over Boston. It's you know, they're in whatever the actual town is called, Charlestown. I don't know. But Ben Affleck is holding up a locked room. He's on the other side of a locked door, and all the money's in the room. And he starts just saying the ages of all the kids that the guards have. And their names. And I think that's what I'm going to do in True Dungeon. Any build ideas? Any team compositions you're going to experiment with this year?
I'm thinking this is a strategy that my character will be like... just like a blob, right?
Okay,
and,
yeah. You're using some of the monstrous classes.
And I move so slow, like molasses, where I create a traffic jam full of other heroes, and they're like, they want to play through, so they just slay whoever's in front of me, and then I just creep and crawl past. So it's pretty lazy, but I would argue the most strategic build is letting strangers do the work for you.
This is a Squid Game inspired glass pathway sort of build.
Yeah, just wait for other people to present the solution in front of you.
That does remind me, I will be going completely Squid Game on Gen Con.
No further explanation necessary.
I'm going completely Squid Game. Yeah, so I am also participating in some RPG content at Gen Con this year.
Do tell.
I'm going to be playing a game of Greyhawk for 78 hours.
Straight?
Yep, and I'll be rotating table. It's basically like, Are you familiar with the 24 Hours of Le Mans race?
No, but I imagine that is similar to the 24 hours of game streams that happens in the fall for like children's hospitals.
Right.
They're the basically the same, right?
Yeah, so like you've got one car that is zooming around this one track, and it has to be driving continuously for 24 hours, and you switch out every 3 hours. So I'm on the decompression crew for a 78-hour game of Greyhawk that we're gonna play. I think we're gonna do two dungeons.
Two.
Two. Two of them.
I roll to attack. What else? I haven't been to Gen Con in a few years, you know?
Yeah, do they still, I mean, the pandemic has made it
Even less
more,
appealing than it was before.
right, yeah, Gen Con being like one of the worst experiences that you can have as a gamer, but also it's really fun and it's a
Oh
really
yeah.
hard thing to explain that
Have
way.
you ever gone not working?
No, my fr I've always gone working
Me
and
too.
it makes it really bad,
Yes.
because when I worked for another publisher, I would go basically 5 days in advance, and we would stay in a hotel outside the airport and have fucking day-long meetings, and they were just horrible.
About
And then
what
when
even? I guess he
I
uses out
I can tell you,
Yeah.
just like all hands company meeting, you know, because just spread out across the world. And
Sure.
but you would get done with this, you know, 9-hour meeting, and then you're just at an airport hotel in Indiana, and you can't do anything.
No, you cannot.
There's nothing. But I mean, it's the people that make it really fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's the people, it's the Island Noodles spoof. It's the people playing medieval folk punk.
Yep. So yeah, gonna be a big one. Gonna be a big one this year. Let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
And we're gonna answer some questions from the passersby on the Indianapolis streets who are wondering what the hell we're doing. I'm thinking we're back on the Brain Trust podcast, and we've, you know, got a lot of looks, got a lot of shame.
I think the shame's because I'm wearing a t-shirt from last year instead of this year's Gen
What does it
Con shirt.
say? I can't read it.
This year's Gen Con shirt, or last year's.
I actually made my own for this year. You know the Beatles shirt that's Helvetica, that's like Paul and Ringo and John.
Yeah.
Mine is dice and cards and Doritos and friends, and it goes all the way down. Spinners and tiles and miniatures, etc.
I'm wearing a shirt that, you know, are you familiar with these Joe Biden I did that stickers on guests?
Sure, yeah.
Something I haven't seen because that's a little bit after my time in America, but
Right.
I've got Matt Mercer's head and he's saying I did that and he's pointing at a natural 20 that is fully critted out on my t-shirt.
It's like puffy ink, it's like dimensional. The D20
Yeah.
is coming out of you like the alien baby.
That would actually be really good. I've got one of those strange Disney World graffiti hats, and instead of Sylvester or Porky Pig on it, it's got a beholder and that's it.
It's got pipe like pipe cleaner eyes hanging off, like dangling.
That's Yeah. I'm coughing this ep. I had the virus.
We are going to get deplatformed for that.
Oh, I mean, I had something novel happen to me the other day.
I recently read the worst novel of my life.
Yeah. I'm drinking a Corona. Yeah, they really do deplat. They can scan the episode to see if we talk about it. Can we honestly not talk about it?
We're going to get a little flag on this episode that says we spread disinformation.
But that's normal.
Yeah. They're not really a Gen Con.
I'm often spreading disinformation. I might do the bit again this year where I pretend to be boothing at Gen Con in the loading dock, and I take a picture of myself in a loading dock, and I say, swing by, I'm here, swing by, loading dock, section 48B. But we are answering questions today on the Brain Trust podcast. We got a couple in the Discord. Find that link in the show notes. Come join our Discord. It's inspirational. It's fun. Every there is really great. And that's what I got to say about the Brain Trust Discord. But our first question from Aaron King is favorite gaming experience at the table.
This is an interesting one because obviously playing at a table feels good, but I'm picturing specifically like the tactility and the sort of like, because there are a lot of games that we can play at a table or digitally or anything else, but just right. Because of this question, I'm thinking like what must be table bound, and of course my answer is going to be the Brain Trust classic A Guide to Casting Phantoms in the Revolution.
Hey.
It's beyond the fact that it's just such a great novel game that's, like, the most unique thing, it does really command physical presence by having the cards and, like, moving around a pentagram, and it just feels really good in that way, and having, like, a table experience.
I totally agree.
And to pick one that we didn't design, I think Dialect is a really great game at the table. Dialect, of course, by Thorny Games, is a game about how language changes and evolves and dies within a like closed community. And you play in these sort of like generational rings that you put words in on note cards, and then as the words like change meaning through generations or whatever, you kind of move them and write on them. And there's just something to seeing the like slanguage that you create.
Mm.
And, you know, the game ends and you can see all the words that on these cards and like, oh, remember how like this used to be that and how this happened? Like, it creates this experience that allows you to see every step of the story that you took and how that story transcends the characters that you focus on. Like, because the game focuses on language and how things change in that way, it's really cool, novel experience that at the end leaves you with this kind of visual reminder of all the things that you did, and that's really rad.
Dialect is such a heater. I think if you haven't checked that game out, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Go peep it. It's been a little bit of quiet about Dialect recently, I think, because it's a few years out, but it's just going to be one of those best games of the 2010s,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
It feels really good. I've played it maybe 3 or 4 times, which I think is a lot more than I've played a lot of games.
Yeah.
And every time is a unique experience. In that same way of Fiasco, of like, you remember kind of every story you make in this system.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, because I both think that my gaming experiences with you when we've been able to play in person are some of my absolute favorites, just because my best friend, I love playing games with you.
Yeah.
That's great. It's always a part of a larger thing, too.
Totally.
Like, I see games. Okay, we all know that I like to play games for 2 hours, about.
Yeah.
Because I'm there to play. I like playing games and designing games and making them, and I think they're awesome. But I have this understanding that it's just a expression of your relationship with your fellow player. Like, the rules could not be there, and you could still enjoy your time with somebody, and it's just a novel way to ruin a perfectly good walk or whatever. Like, so I think more about like the powerful play groups that I've had, and I had this like run. I'm nostalgic about this long running group I had in Boston when, at its largest, we were playing Apocalypse World with like 9 people, and the game's not meant for that. It's meant for half of that group, and we just made it work, and it was, you know, it basically every time we played, because there were so many people who were so good at spotlight sharing and everything like that, every move was huge, and it just turned into like a prestige TV show in a post-apocalyptic snowed out New York. And I was like, that's just something I, from a narrative standpoint, love, and these are all my friends, and we all get to spend this rare time together, you know, after school when everything gets more complicated. And so I think those experiences are my favorite. But if I had to pick like a single favorite moment, I don't know. That's tough. I should have thought about this one more. I just keep on thinking of when we recorded the podcast in Worcester and then played Mothership, and it was just like,
yeah,
a chill, super fast Mothership game. I was like, nah, it just kind of rules. That's kind of all it needed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, like you said, it's about that interactivity and that friendship at the table. But I think that's a completely valid answer too. And it's also, you know, the systems doesn't matter answer, but it's often true, especially when it's people you're close to. And I think that's why I, just as a tangent, like, Exalted Funeral Con is this weekend. It'll be over by the time you're hearing this, but I'm so apprehensive about running stuff because I just don't have that same energy or fervor when I'm running for people that I don't feel close to, and it makes me completely shut down.
It's really freaky. It's like way more, we're both like performers musically, and it is a totally different show playing, running a game for new people who might be volunteering or paying for the experience of playing.
Yeah. And you can't really account for like, we've played so much together now that we know sort of our preferred play styles and how we work together in that same way. Like when you play in a band for a long time, you kind of preemptively anticipate what's going to happen. And doing that cold or doing that with people you don't know is really hard, and it can be really daunting. I'm always like afraid I'm going to say something that I think is funny or cool and everyone's going to think it sucks. And
yeah.
So I commend people who are like able and willing and super good at doing that on the fly with people that they're not as familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a different muscle, and people that are good at it are amazing. It's, I ran a game on stream recently, and it was Torque for Tony's stream, plus one EXP, and it was the stress of like both teaching a game, introducing my game to a evergreen audience because a video just lives forever, and then being entertaining and a human being. And it was so much. Yeah. Running games on stream is so difficult. Huge, yeah, shout adding out.
The public-facing quality to it is a whole nother layer, too, of like being an entertainer.
Yeah, like I can't take a breath, really. I have to keep the show on the road. Yeah, it's a lot. I think there's, I mean, it's an old observation that the way games that are run for an audience and that are run for just players are basically a different genus and species of role-playing. Like, like we are the Neanderthals and they are the Homo sapiens. And I can cruise with the Homo sapiens for a little bit, but I'm going to find where my limits are.
Yeah.
So Yeah, it's really interesting. I feel like I could. The key is to like get some adventures that you know inside out. So that part, the improv part, is not really, because that's a huge portion of my GMing style is like pure improv, no prep, because that's the most fun to me, and I like the plasticity of coming up with stuff with a bunch of people. But I feel like you just have to throw that away or make that less of a concern.
Yeah, you have to have a plan, I guess. And that's kind of antithetical to how you and I like to run stuff.
Because we want to let the game get away from us and get weird, because
Yeah.
that's where it's interesting.
Yeah, those are the special moments of like, no one saw this coming, no one could.
Right. I have been playing with a couple of my friends back in Boston who are now fully dispersed throughout the United States, so it that classic thing. But we are playing a Morkborg city campaign, and it's super fun. They are all people who died and went to hell, but in between hell and being alive is a city where you wait out your days until it's time to go. And it's fully improvised. I just have a few details. And I ran a session, and then I was out sick a week after that. And then a week came by, and they were chasing down a lead, and I could not fucking remember what it was about or anything. And I just like had this really nice, honest moment where I was like, I have no idea what this was or what this was for. So does anybody have any cool ideas? And we just went with it. Like, yeah, in between last session and now, I really lost some frames back there. So I need something. And you know, I feel like that kind of forgiveness is much quicker when you are part of the crew that's making the story happen. I don't know. These are just like very, feel like very stale musings on actual play to me, but they're
Right.
definitely a part of it.
Let's move on to the next question.
Yeah, what do we got?
Authenticity Trip Quinn asks, if we were to make an absolutely unreasonably gonzo, true Kickstarter monstrosity of a game with a zillion pieces for gamists, what would that look like?
Feel like we did this twice.
It's funny too because I immediately know, or like my answer is Game Island.
Game Island,
The
yeah.
sort of long-fabled brain trust project that we wanted to make, like a sandbox of zines and rules and let you kind of pick and choose. But I think, you know, unlimited time, unlimited budget, monkey on a typewriter publication of this
No paper shortage, yeah.
is like Gloomhaven, where you have
Right.
little boxes within the box, and each box is a module and it has special pieces and stuff, and you have some that are sealed that you only open after completing certain other like storylines and stuff. But of course, Game Island, I think it's sort of like changed in its main conceit. It was more about the methodology than any particular setting or story, but I think we were going with like paranormal slice of life.
Right, that like, I mean, we come back to building stories, the Chris Ware
Yeah,
thing,
perfect.
where it's about the exploration of the game. So the game is like the collection of pieces you pull out of the box. I just want to play it. Like, that's the
Yeah.
problem.
Have you ever played or messed with or heard of Pyramid Arcade?
No, what is that?
So I'm gonna look up the publisher real quick, but it's basically a box of components,
That's so
and
cool.
the main component is these plastic see-through pyramids of three different sizes, and then there's like six different colors. Looney Labs is the publisher, so they're the people who make, they have like a really popular smaller, it's not Quix, but it's something like that. Anyway, but the idea being like there's a ton of components in here. There are pre-made games that you can play. but it's kind of more like a freestyle. Like, if you grab these boards and these dice and a set of pyramids, like, what game is this one?
Cool.
And it's like hyper modular. I think the game kind of boosts that it's, like over 50 games in one or whatever, but it's effectively infinite, and people continue to publish abstract strategy stuff with these components. And if you have the box, and you can also just buy like a set of pyramids from them. If you have those, you can basically do anything you want with them. And I'm kind of picturing that too. And in that way, it feels like a chest of action figures, which is, I think, is like a metaphor we used before of just like, oh, I'm gonna pick the Undertaker, and you're gonna pick My Little Pony, and then we're gonna have Sonic the Hedgehog, and we're gonna like tell our little story with these guys that we just pulled out of a box. It brings you to that really pure, imaginative kid space, and that twisted with our sort of perception of storytelling and art and meaning, in that sort of more adult building stories kind of way, will innately lead to some of just the most compelling stuff we could ever come up with, regardless of whatever system is in place. Again, because we just love the form. We love telling stories, and we can really enjoy. To me, one of the like best feelings, to kind of tie this into the earlier question of favorite gaming experience, one of the best feelings is just having that idea that clicks perfectly. A really smooth, you have your spread of puzzle pieces, and you find two that really fit together snug, and you're like, wow, it's just so satisfying. It
It
just
feels
like
cosmic in
a
some
hug
way.
for your brain. And I, again, with this metaphor, it feels like playing music. It feels like hitting the right note at the right time. It just is, yeah, sort of ethereal. It's satisfaction outside of an individual. And I think we could, you and I,
We could crush this.
given a box of stuff, would make that.
Okay, I mean, controversial suggestion. We are not doing a Kickstarter this summer because our projects got too complicated and we've got stuff in the fall. But what if we each made a mini zine every month that was, say, small corner of Game Island? And then by the end of 6 months, we have 12 zines or something.
That would be rad. That
I
would be
mean,
really cool.
that seems low key enough that if we needed to rush, we could do it, and we could build it over time instead of sitting on all of them at once.
And I think I know you too, and you know me, but like zine is innately a loose concept in itself. So you do end up with that building stories, like mixed format and no sequence and yeah, this novel. I mean, that's what game. I think that's like the most achievable Game Island.
That's something we could just start doing now, and if it ends up being, if it ends up having a wider commercial interest or anything, we can just figure out some kind of long box thing for it.
Yeah, right.
But that's something I come back to that idea all the time, especially when I was rewatching Lost, for example, or like. Just anything with big, complicated stories and interesting ways of telling those stories is so exciting for me. So, yeah, maybe we should just do that.
Yeah, let's soft commit. I think that is like our opus, honestly. This is like the summation of our game design philosophies.
Yeah, look, we've had a rough time back here, just behind the curtain. Last year's been hard, and so. Yeah, this sounds like a good way to get a little bit more comfy and get back in the high experimentation place.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what we would make is Game Island, and we will make it. So thank you. Thank you, Gwen. All right, ready for next question? Want to
Let's
take a break
go.
and come back?
Let's
Next
throw a
cue.
break here and then we'll do the next one.
Thank you. And we're back on the Brain Trust podcast with another question from our awesome Discord. Nevin asks, what's something you've learned in the last year of game design you'd like to share with other designers?
I have a few answers, and I think some of them will seem really obvious, but that I'm struggling with accepting. The first is give yourself just like more freedom in your life. Stop. We are both people who promote anti-crunch culture, and we both crunch at least twice a year.
Yeah.
And that's not good, and it sucks to not be able to take your own advice sometimes, especially when it causes you literal physical harm.
Right.
But it's also really hard when you're caught up in a project to listen to what your body needs, or like what you get this tunnel vision of like everything is the project. And I definitely lose some sense of myself, or whether it be social responsibility or, you know, like I said, taking care of myself and getting enough food or going outside or whatever.
Something is going to start atrophying when you do that.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes you can tell what it's going to be, and sometimes you have been in Affinity Designer every day for the last month, and you're just like, all I do is watch YouTube videos and work.
Yeah. Like, and then when I'm not working, I dissociate super hard.
You need to, because like that is the way you're dealing with burnout and the recovery. You know, by the time you've realized you're burning out, it's too late.
Yeah. So,
and that, like, I don't know, but go ahead. You're in the middle of a thought.
I just have gotten better at recognizing what causes burnout, what burnout feels like. And I don't know that I've necessarily gotten better at taking action against it, but just becoming more aware of it does help me in some way. And I have been better about taking hard time off instead of soft time off, which is like,
right,
you know, oh, I'll pilk at it when I feel like it, or if like I'm inspired, I'll paint or whatever. I've gotten better about actually like quarantining this room that is my workspace and not going in there when I shouldn't, to try to protect myself. And like, you know, even going to like the sculpture garden and walking for the afternoon, that can be inspiring. Engaging with
dumb walks are life-saving.
Engaging with art and philosophy and stuff is what inspires me to make games, but that is innately different. You know, like Michelangelo sitting in front of the marble slab is work.
I mean, to draw a comparison, I think you are a lot like Michelangelo, because he did bring his dog with him to work.
And I love radical pizza, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the burnout thing is huge. This is going to dovetail a little bit just with what it is to make creative work your full-time job. And so much of it is managing your daily emotional availability for creative work.
Yeah.
And figuring out when you are, for example, most able to write, or what time of day is best for more automatic tasks, or correspondence or things like that. Another truism is that as indie game designers, we have to do every single bit of the process, from like sourcing paper, designing games, playtesting games, laying it out, doing stuff like that. And instead of one thing that you learn how to do, because a reason why both Adam and I love this work is that we get to learn how to do new stuff on a weekly or monthly basis.
Yeah.
I'm just constantly, I feel like, you know, if you're not learning something new every month, you're just going to get left behind.
That, like, is the human experience to me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we both like picking up new hobbies and learning stuff, and book design in general is a perfect medium to be doing stuff like that, because you get to make each book as a culmination of your skills while making that book.
Yeah, and that sort of mirrors the play experience, right? That thing we were talking about earlier of this sort of ethereal pleasure or this like satisfaction that's coming from outside of self is just like, wow, this paragraph fits perfectly in this column.
Yeah.
This illustration really encapsulates this flavor paragraph. This harmony that kind of exists in creativity, which I think is why I'm so drawn to storytelling games to begin with, because the act of making them and the act of playing them like rhyme in that same style of satisfaction.
Right. It's like how pottery is a collection of like nine different extremely opposite skills that you need to know how to do. And it comes together at the end as a single thing that you don't think about throwing the pot or glaze or working the clay or using the kiln or whatever. You just have a thing you use every day. I don't know. I both like comparing the game art of game design and bookmaking to other things, but I also think that the comparisons are troubling in some way because no art is the same and all art is the same and stuff like that. But
Yeah, I think more we're talking about our own like experience with those
yeah.
mediums and how it feels for us, which is honestly my favorite part of doing the show and what I kind of miss about game design Twitter and game design Discord or like my online spaces is just this sort of philosophizing and it's like it to me it kind of just feels like this sort of kumbaya, like group hug around the thing. Again, you know, this is we get to hang out every week more than we hang out every day, pretty much, you and I
Yeah.
online, and that feels good. But that thing that we are circling is game design, and it could be anything, it could be whatever, but it is game design, and so kind of just making sure that fire's still roaring, you know, putting a couple extra logs on the fire to continue to facilitate those relationships and those sort of conversations and those things that are where satisfaction and like feeling complete come from.
Yeah.
It is separate from I'm picturing the God, Holy Spirit triangle. Like none of these things are the same thing, but all of them are one thing. And that's like friendship, thought, you know, like growing your brain or massaging your brain or whatever, and playing games are these or designing games, I guess, is like the fourth quadrant here.
Yeah.
And not any one of them is any other one of them, but all of them together are this thing that is like makes me feel alive.
Yeah, it's we this is a cool art form that we do, huh?
Yeah.
It's weird. It's really interesting and neat, and I'm glad that I can support myself doing it. Like, it's a dream. And it is really hard because the money isn't really there, but the joy, I mean, it's passion work, right?
And I wonder too what I don't know that we could have that same sort of artistic satisfaction and integrity that we feel while still engaging with capital and feeling that freedom.
Right.
Because in that same way, like art industries or creative industries are not necessarily the most financially sound to begin with, but that's not why you get into them.
Right. Yeah. Let's see. Can we give anybody like concrete game advice? I think one thing that I've taken away to hard shift into like the methods of making games is procedural generation has been the goat for me this year.
Totally.
And I was recently walking someone through how to do it, and it made me like reevaluate my process and to see what the goals for different games are and how to use Google Sheets and a couple simple automations to build a library of game design elements. And I learned that from you, and it's just one of the most immediately useful things that has just catapulted my game design ability through the roof.
I tend to use it more often now for flavor stuff, for
Cool.
setting elements and creature design and stuff, where I basically make like a word cloud and I program sheets to give me combinations, and then I can peruse them and be like, ah, yes, the cyst bishop is fucking cool. Like, because I put the
Cyst
words in
Bishop
there, but
is awesome.
yeah. I put the words in to be evocative of the theme or setting or whatever, but then the spreadsheet gives me permutations. But what we've talked about too, and we did with Campfire, was using those permutations for the actual ways that players and the game interact. And I think we did an episode on it, and it is definitely one of the most useful tools in my tool belt as well. Just having the options laid out in front of you for you to peruse instead of you trying to grab each one from your like mind cloud or whatever, just takes a little bit of the weight off of your shoulders, and you're still doing the design and you're still making sense of this automated text, but
Yeah, I think there's also a level of when. So, for example, just to spell out what we're talking about, I'm working on a game called Big Grave. It's all about fashion. Underlying it is a rock, paper, scissors system where you have four moves and you use those moves against an opponent. And if you get a strong success, you fill up star sections. And if you get five star sections, you win. And so put in every combination of strong success, weak success was one column. Another column was different effects that it would have. So maybe it stuns the opponent for one round, or maybe it lets you hit a locked star or something else like that. So you can tell I've got goals that the game has, filling up these stars, ways to achieve those goals, which is by using strong moves, and special effects. And so I fill those three lists up with every variant and then ask the spreadsheet to combine all of those in every combination. And then I peruse those combinations, and the game design comes from both selecting all your nouns and verbs and then pruning the ones that don't make sense and keeping the ones that do, that then fold into developing its own design language around that. So it saves, a lifetime of designing an entire game and then finding the stuff that doesn't work. You can front load this stuff and see the different permutations that a game could take, and you are going down a path. And it's just so good. And that's all for the questions. Come hang out with us in our Discord, ask us more stuff, and we'll see you next time on the Brain Trust podcast at Gen Con. Adam, where can people find you?
I'm at worldchamp.io, and you can follow me on Twitter at WCGameCo. Please vote for Babes in the Wood as the best family product at the Ennies right now.
Go vote. The link will be in the show notes.
Forever Horse is probably my next little zine that I'm going to be doing through my Patreon at WorldChampGameCo, and that'll also be available at Grand Rapids Zine Fest, which is the first next thing that I'm doing in public, which is mid to late August. I will follow up with that.
Hell yeah. And you can find me at will.com. You could find my stuff at goodluckpress.co. And thanks everybody for listening. Brain emoji, handshake emoji.